There's a comedian who makes his living telling humorous stories about food. In fact, several years ago, comedian Jim Gaffigan wrote a book about food called A Love Story. And in the interviews he does about this book, he talks about food as a way to overcome some of the divisions, even in our country, where we get locked in our own camps and we argue and we are divided on so many things. Food, he says, is one thing that we all have in common and something we all share and we can appreciate and laugh at. But in his one little sketch, one of his sobering observations he makes is this. It would be embarrassing trying to explain what an appetizer is to someone from another starving country. Oh yeah, the appetizer, he says, that's the food that we eat before we eat our food. No, he says, that's dessert. That's the food we eat after we eat our food. But in this country, we eat tons of food. Sometimes there's so much food, he says, we just stick it in a bag and we take it home. And then we throw it out the next day. Or maybe we give it to the dog. We aren't really aware of how much food we really have in this country. The food options are endless until we realize how much little the rest of the world has. The holy virtue that has been given to us to talk about today is temperance. Temperance sounds like it should be a good word when we talk about food. It should be a biblical, churchly word. It certainly has maybe given prominence in a certain culture. We can certainly see how monks trying to be holy in the desert would like a word called temperance, but it seems too a little bit stuffy and maybe a little boring. Maybe like all this food stuff is our own sort of discipline. And it doesn't really square really with the ministry of Jesus. Temperance is not the first word that comes to mind. I don't think Jesus would have went to the cross for being a temperate person. In fact, one accused of being a glutton and drunkard isn't a temperate person, even though we have no record that Jesus was guilty of eating too much or drinking too much. But Jesus was more about generosity with his food. Jesus crossed boundaries with his food. Jesus multiplied 5 loaves and 2 fish into a feeding for 5,000. Instead of maybe a holy virtue of temperance, I'm going to suggest maybe the holy virtue of hospitality. That hospitality may speak more to the ministry of Jesus and more to the discipline that we need to think about when it comes to sharing our food with others, because hospitality always includes others. It always includes those who join us for a meal. Hospitality preserves the rich image of feasting and celebration that we find in the Bible. The woman who finds her lost coin and throws a party for her neighbors because she's so happy, or the father who's so excited because his son returned and he kills the fatted calf and throws a big banquet feast. There's something holy and symbolic in a full table where others are invited. In the Bible, feasting is often a foretaste of eternity, life with God, where there is plenty enough to go around for everyone. The lectionary scriptures today for this particular Sunday just happen to be some food stories from the ministry of Jesus. In Luke 14, where Jesus is speaking about table etiquette, and where Jesus talks about knowing where you sit at the table, and it's not at the head of the table, it's at the other end. And Jesus goes on to talk about who you invite to the table, and it's not those that can pay you back, it's those that can't afford a meal. And of course, it's not really the particulars, it's not really the etiquette that Jesus is concerned about. It's rather that our tables and our social gatherings are places for unexpected guests. Jesus taught that true table fellowship was eating with sinners, and Jesus invited himself to dine at the house of Zacchaeus. Jesus shared his last meal with his disciples who would betray him and deny him. And when we celebrate communion, we come to the table to encounter God's gift of grace that is for ourselves, and we learn from this table to share that grace and the bread and the cup with the world. It's a sign of God's kingdom. In a recent issue of the Christian Century, Craig Barnes, the president of Princeton Seminary, writes an article about the wedding of his stepson. And he titles his little reflection, "A Glimpse of Cana." And he talks about that moment when two people make vows to each other for the rest of their lives without any clue what's in store, and how their lives will change in 10 or 50 years from that point, and how there's going to be times of pain and wounding that they will each do to each other, and how dependent all marriages are on the grace and the mercy of God. But at weddings, Barnes goes on to reflect, no one wants to hear, especially the bride and groom don't want to hear how hard and difficult the journey is going to be. What you want to do at a wedding is to celebrate and to kick back and to rejoice in one fleeting moment when by the grace of God you're allowed to have a party. And in his case, with his stepson, the weather was perfect, and the food and the wine, he writes, and even the dancing among older folks was with abandon. Of course, Craig Barnes goes on to say that 99% of our lives are not at all like that. In fact, all of us practical pastoral types, myself included, try to convince couples to put your energy into your marriage, into your life together, and not in your wedding reception. It's a worship service, after all, not a production. Have some temperance. Practice temperance. But every now and then, Barnes writes, in the face of a hostile and evil world, filled with temptation and all manner of challenges, when ordinary people witness to their love for each other and dare to stand before the congregation and make a till death do us part commitment. And Barnes writes, when you see your child lit up with love and you're surrounded by old friends and strangers alike, you kick back, trusting all over again in the goodness and mercy and love of God. And then he goes on to reflect on Jesus' first miracle, a story that I might recall has little to do with temperance, and unless it was really Jesus' resistance to get involved at all in that wedding in Cana. But as that story is recorded in John 2, and Jesus turning water into wine, and the best wine for a gathering of guests who had already consumed the earlier stuff that they ran out, the miracle of Cana, like many of our peak celebrations, is an event that is fleeting. It's a glimpse of something more, of eternity, of life with God that stretches, includes the whole community and world. So are there ways for us to practice more modesty with our food? Are there ways to celebrate even without food and without drink? I'm sure there are. Are there ways that we can maybe find the disciplines and the practices to limit our food and to share with the needy and some other kind of discipline? Of course there are. Can we improve our eating and drinking habits and how we care for our bodies? Absolutely. In fact, the Christian journey is a journey of discipline. It's a journey of walking the narrow road. It's a journey where we may be persecuted for being different, not going along with everyone else around us. But friends, there's also good news in the gospel, that there's manna on the ground, and it's enough for today. The Christian life is not up to our own discipline and work all the time. May we discover the holy joy and the holy practice of sharing our loaves and fish and our food and drink with others, as this verse from Isaiah 58 reminds us, to invite those who have less to our tables. The prophet Isaiah invites us to practice our piety by our extravagant generosity, by sharing with others, to be temperate and joyful, to be disciplined and at times extravagant in what we share with those around us, sharing our bread with the poor, inviting those with less to our tables, trusting in God. And when we celebrate and when we feast, friends, may we find ways to share our food with others and witness to the free, gracious, redeeming work of God. Amen.